Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi.
From the future! Not a very Dread Pirate Roberts. I am the Dread Pirate Roberts. There will be no survivors!
Not sure how we got there, but...
Yeah, I don't know either.
Today we're going to be playing Targi. It is designed by Andreas Steiger. The artist is Franz Vowinkel of, let's see, what have we played? He has a lot. I'm going to go with Dominion, yeah. Intrigue, Clank in Space, Magic the Gathering, Ra, Quest for El Dorado, Catan.
Yeah, he had like 500 games on Board Game Geek.
He's been had a busy career there, and it is published by Cosmos. The description is, unlike in other cultures, the desert Tuareg men, known as Targi, cover their faces, whereas women of the tribe do not wear veils. They run the household, and they have the last word in the home and the tents. Different families are divided into tribes, headed by the Emaskarin, or nobles. As leaders of a Tuareg tribe, players trade goods from near, such as dates and salt, and far, like pepper, in order to obtain gold and other benefits, and enlarge their family. In each round, new offerings are made. Cards are a means to an end in order to obtain the popular tribe cards. That's a weird sentence.
Yeah.
Like, there should be more to that.
I think it's a translation thing.
The mechanics are endgame bonuses, modular board, set collection, turn order progressive, and worker placement. And the box art is... a real close-up of a man looking at you through his veil.
It reminds me of that super famous picture of the Afghan girl with the like super blue eyes. Obviously, the girl wasn't veiled, but that's what the picture kind of reminds me of.
Yeah, so based on this, would you pull it off a shelf?
I mean, the description's kind of weird. The box art, I think, is kind of intriguing just because it's very different from other box art. You would think with a game that deals with tribes and stuff, there'd probably be like a group of people. So it's very different. I think I would pick it up more because like I've heard the name before. Like I've heard people talk about it and say that it's a good game.
Yeah.
And it was a Kinderspiel nominee as well. So I think, you know, knowing that and hearing people talk about it, that's probably why I would pick it up. And less because of the description itself.
Yeah. The description doesn't really say much about the game, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I've actually heard much about this. I'm sure I've heard the name before, but it's never really been on my radar. And I will say the box art, it's eye catching, pun intended.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like if you were to walk by, it would at least jump out at you. I don't know if it would entice me to pick it up, but I might just to see what all it's all about. So.
Yeah, I feel like this is a game that if you have it on a shelf, you definitely want the front showing, because I feel like not knowing what the side of the box looks like, you know, it might not be as eye-catching. And, you know, based on how most, you know, board game stores have their games, the newer ones are usually the ones that are facing out so you can see the cover. But this being a much, I don't want to say much older game because it's only 8 years old, but...
Still, in board game world, that's an older game.
Yeah, exactly.
How do I think it's played?
Yeah, with the very descriptive description.
And there's a lot of mechanics, too, to not go along with that. Okay, well, yeah. Similar to Jaipur, I'm guessing we're going to be trading. There's going to be items such as dates and salt and pepper. I'm guessing there's going to be a distance thing in the trade. So I'm thinking we got a modular board. So maybe we're looking at like the Saharan Desert and we're going to have locations. So it's not a pick up and deliver, though. But maybe there's some elements of that in there, or worker placements. So like maybe we'll put our tribe members on different locations to collect goods. And then you get some difference between near locations and far locations, near and far to what? I'm not sure. Destination, I guess. So yeah, you're going to be placing workers to collect goods and then trading them to, you're going to get sets of goods and then trading them to different locations. And I'm guessing there'll be some kind of movement mechanic because there's a modular board. That's interesting. Like a worker placement with like a modular board, unless the just different locations you can place are the pieces on the board. But like when I think modular board, I think more like a hex grid that you move around on. So
yeah,
that's what I'm having in my mind. And then end game bonuses are based on the things you've collected. That's my guess.
Yeah, I mean, you had some elements and not some some other elements. So what kind of history do you got for us this week?
So who are the Blue Men of the Sahara? The Tuareg are a semi-nomadic people that have inhabited the Sahara Desert in Africa for thousands of years, recorded by Greek historian Herodotus. Tuareg is an Arabic name meaning abandoned by God, because they just live in the desert. So I guess they're kind of looked down upon by their more non-nomadic neighbors. And they refer to themselves as Imohag, which means freemen. So they clearly like their freedom to roam around the desert.
Yeah.
The men are known for wearing blue veils that cover their face, traditionally to protect from sands while crossing the desert. But it became culturally significant, and they always wear the veils even around family. And they begin wearing veils at the age of 25. I didn't see if there was like a ceremony or something, but I imagine there it's like a rite of passage kind of thing.
Yeah.
The Tuareg are used to have camel caravans that played a crucial role in the trans-Saharan trade, linking most of sub-Saharan Africa to the Mediterranean ports. And in modern days, I mean, they do still do a lot of trading like that, but obviously.
Yeah, I was going to ask if they're still doing stuff.
I mean, they still inhabit the Sahara and are the key like way to transport around the desert. But obviously during colonialization with trains and stuff, they kind of pushed them to the side. But and then as kind of a group that spanned there, so they go across a bunch of nations like Libya, Algeria, Mali. So kind of all multiple nations. So they're kind of a marginalized with not a lot of representation, similar to the Kurds.
Okay.
So I guess that's kind of their modern day problems, but it sounds like a pretty cool culture. And obviously like surviving in the desert for thousands of years where most people wouldn't, they got some cool like cultural, you know, traditions and stuff.
I always think that kind of stuff is interesting because, you know, just that whole kind of lifestyle and then stuff like the, you know, they don't start wearing the veil until 25. Like, it's super interesting to like think about, or not necessarily think about, but like learn about like why it's culturally significant and like what it kind of means.
It's interesting 25 because like obviously they would probably start wearing it when they started doing the caravans and stuff. So like that seems, it seems like they'd probably start doing that at an earlier age. And then, of course, since like most of the men were, I think, as the game description said, like most of the men were doing the caravanning, then so the women have a much more prominent role than cultures of the time because they were in charge of like, you know, farming and livestock and homesteads and like even like governing back home. So it sounded like an interesting culture that I did not know about before.
Yeah, I didn't until I like started looking at the description and making the show notes. I had never heard of them.
Yep.
Okay, so the game itself, it's going to be played over a series of rounds, and at the end, the player with the most victory points is the winner, so pretty traditional. The game can end if a player gains their 12th tribe card or if the robber reaches the final raid card.
Oh, wow, what?
Yeah. So like I said, like you were close on some parts in your guessing how it's played and then off on other parts. The whole idea is that was part of the problems with, you know, you're taking a camel train across the desert, but you still had to deal with other tribes and
No, it makes sense. It's just there was no hint of that in the description. Exactly.
The description was not great. All right. So the first player is the last one to have eaten dates. Do you know the last time you ate a date?
I got to Google what dates are. I don't even know if I've ever eaten dates.
So the only reason I know I've eaten dates, I don't know when, is BP and I do the whole like meal delivery service, Sunbasket. And every now and again, there is a meal with dates in it. So I know I've eaten dates.
They look like raisins. I cannot confirm that I have ever eaten dates. So I guess you're first. Okay.
All right. So the round is broken up into five phases. The robber, in the first phase, the robber is advanced one border card. The robber is going to block locations for the players to choose, but then in the corner cards, so the map itself is made up of a 5x5 grid, and the corners are raids. When they reach that, the players will have to give up goods or victory points. Then the next phase is the players are going to alternate placing their targi figures on the border cards. The rules are you can't place in the same place as the robber. You can't place on the raid cards. So basically, the three cards that are on the edges of each column and row on the borders of the map, that's where you're going to place your targis. And then you can't place where another targi is, and you can't place in the opposite row or column of the other player's targi. So what's going to happen is once we've placed our three targi, it's going to create intersections in the center area. So in the next phase, we're going to take our tribe markers and we're going to put them on the intersections. These cards all have different actions on them that we're going to be able to perform in the fourth phase. So starting with the first player, you're going to be able to perform all the function, all the actions where your targi and tribe markers are, and you can do them in any order that you want. So actions are going to be stuff like gain goods, be able to draw cards, be able to, you know, pay goods to gain victory points and stuff like that. The border cards are never going to be picked up. Those actions will always remain the same. The center cards where the tribe markers are, those are going to get removed after the action is taken. And then they're going to get replaced with the opposite card. So the cards, there's two types of cards that are going to be in the center. You're going to have goods cards, which obviously give you goods. And after that action is taken, we're going to put a face down tribe card in its place. And if it's a tribe card, after you take the action, the player has an option at that point. There's going to be a cost at the top, and it's going to be either goods or coins. And then you're going to be able to place it in that player's display area. And that's going to help gain victory points either immediately, give you some kind of bonus through the rest of the game, or give you victory points at the end of the game. You can place it in your hand to be able to play later, or you can discard it. So you can only ever have one card in your hand at a time, and it can't be traded out. So the only way to get rid of it is to put a targi on the noble card, mortar border card, which allows you to either discard it or pay the cost and play it. Your display area is a 3x4 grid that you build from left to right. And you can start any row and you can have multiple rows going. And what you're trying to do, or one of the things you're trying to do, is you're trying to get symbols that are on the cards. So cards will have a well, a camel rider, an oasis, a targia, which is the female members of the Tuareg, or a camp. If you can get a row with all the same, it'll give you 4 victory points at the end. And if you can get a row with 4 different symbols, it'll get you 2. So at the end of the round, and then when you take that tribe card, we're going to replace it with a goods card face down. So at the end of the round, all the face down cards are going to get flipped over. So now we'll be able to reveal what those center cards are. And then the starting player token is to be given to the next player, and play advances to the next turn. And those are the 5 phases for a turn. If either player gains their 12th tribe card, or the robber reaches the final position, which would be, I think it's 16 turns, the player with the most points is the winner. And victory points will come from the actions that you can take, tribe cards in your display, and points earned from symbols in the rows. And in case of a tie, the player with the most gold wins. And if it's still tied, then the player with the most goods wins. And if it's still a tie after that, the game ends in a draw. And that is all the rules.
Let's play. We just finished a game of Targi. To recap, we both tied with 39 Tuareg points.
Indeed.
At first, I was scared that I lost because Kiwi had more goods, but I had more coins, so I won the tiebreaker. I had 2 coins, 2 Kiwi, 0. I think he had 3 goods to my 1. So we're pretty close on that, too.
And then we both finished our display. We both got our 12th card in the same turn.
Yeah, it was a very close game. I almost barely didn't have the goods to play my last card, so he would have won on that. Yep. So it was a very close game. Felt neck and neck pretty much the whole way through.
Yeah.
Did you have a distinct strategy?
No, well, I feel like this is one of those games where it's hard to have a strategy at the beginning, and you kind of build a strategy as you go out because you really don't know what cards are coming out. Because I started building an Oasis row and you started building a Targia row. Yeah. And then I didn't really have a clear strategy until I got that one card, the Targia card, that was like, hey, you get 4 points instead of 2 points for having rows of different icons.
Yeah.
So then I played to that, which I wasn't really set up for that. I had to take a couple extra turns to get set up for it because I had a camp card and that would have ruined it. And that would have changed my score. Not significant. Yeah. Probably significantly.
Yeah. I was kind of the same. I changed strategy like 5 times throughout where I was going to go for a whole row of camels at the bottom, but then I kind of got blocked and I didn't think maybe more camels would come out. And then of course like 3 more did, but probably could have gotten that done quicker, but I'd already played, I forget, a different kind of card. So I had switched to a different symbol kind of row. So yeah, I swapped back and forth a few times based on that. And like you said, like different bonuses come out and that changes your plan. I think in general, and it wasn't an intentional strategy, I had more cards that didn't give me perks. They just gave me straight victory points because in the early game, I was like, oh, man, Kiwi's got all this stuff that like reduces the costs of things and stuff like that. And I was like, mine don't do anything useful. I don't think it was intentional. I think it just sort of the cards we grabbed in the early trying to make our symbols match.
Right.
Yeah, I kind of like that, though. I like that you kind of got to think on your feet and things are always changing. Those are kind of fun games.
Well, I thought it was both, you know, there were a couple of turns where we were both like, all right, stick to the plan. And it was very clear that like a turn or two later that our plan had definitely changed. It was like, all right, stick to the new plan.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Even like, like in the middle of your turn, you're changing your plan just because like a gold coin comes out and those are hard to get. And it's like, I got to go for that coin, change everything.
And there was definitely like one or two turns where like I tried to strategically chose where I played my first Targi to not like give away what I wanted. And then hoping like, okay, I hope Eric doesn't go to this row or column because I really need this one thing.
Yeah. We'll dig in more on that on player interaction, but what'd you think of the theme? First of all, did you feel like a sub-Saharan trader?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, this is one of those themes where like at the beginning, it was like, you know, we both learned about a culture that we had no idea about, which on the one hand is good. But then, you know, the whole conversation about cultural appropriation, like it's hard to say because like I don't know if this does wrong by this particular group of people or if it's good, you know, because there's definitely a lot of themes where people have like kind of appropriated. I think like Asian culture in general, you know, regardless of where it's at, like I feel like that one gets taken a lot and appropriated and kind of misused. And I'm not sure that this goes to that level, but I'm always concerned that like maybe it's just because I'm ignorant and I don't know one way or the other.
Yeah, I would say it's a mixed bag. Like sometimes it's good and bad. Like I think this obviously pretty much could have been themed as almost anything trade-wise. You could have done something generic. So I guess and they could have gone with like a culture that is in pop culture or something currently, and that would have felt wrong. But the fact that this was like, it doesn't feel like that because I mean, we don't really know anything about it. I would say we pay more attention than the average person to these things. So it is highlighting a culture that we don't know about and maybe like bringing more attention to their culture, which is not bad.
Right.
So if that's the goal, yes. And so I don't know. It's hard to say. Obviously, we're not really in the position to say it either. But I didn't necessarily feel bad playing it as compared to some other ones where it was clearly like, hey, this is a popular indigenous culture. We're just going to throw that on our theme so people like it. Like what was the one? Blue Lagoon. And it had that Moana feel to it. And I think it came out right around the time Moana came out.
Well, and on top of that, that has the whole like settlers and colonization piece to it, which is a whole different can of worms. But like you said, like the theme could have been anything. So you make this a space theme and that completely goes away and you don't change the game at all.
True. But I mean, I also, is it a bad thing to bring attention to marginalized cultures to, you know,
Yeah, and that's why it's like hit or miss. I think for this particular game, like I don't get that feeling.
I don't either.
But then at the same time, like I don't know if that's because I'm ignorant or if it because like this game like really doesn't evoke that kind of like negative exactly. stereotype.
But yeah, it doesn't really give in terms of like a trading the sub-Saharan, it doesn't really give the feel of like traveling and, you know, that kind of thing. Like I was imagining, yeah. like in my initial guess at the game, like I pictured like, you know, trade routes through the Sahara kind of thing on the map. And it doesn't really do that at all. What about the art?
You know, we talked about the box cover being like very.
Yeah, it grabs your attention.
Like that same kind of like art style kind of goes through the other cards. But because the cards themselves were taken up more by, you know, depending on what side you had it on, text or the icons, it kind of took away like the art on the card itself was very small.
Yeah, I think it was decent, but because it's an icon heavy game, I think if they went overboard, it would have been hard to distinguish the iconography. So I think it was yeah. a good balance of, you know, decent art, but it's tends to be subdued and more background because I mean, well, then some of the icons are the art, like the dates and things like that are the goods.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's kind of a mix. I don't think they could have gone too much or else your eyes would have had a hard time distinguishing all the icons. So
all the art, at least like kind of it's all in the same style. I did like that the border cards, like you had the mountains and the desert and then there was ocean. So it kind of like depicted that whole, you know, the Sahara Desert kind of it's bordered by a lot of different geography. And so they tried to play that out with the yep. border cards and all the art ties together. So it's not jarring to go from that very bold box art to kind of the, you know, less bold because of, you know, for mechanical reasons,
right.
art on the cards. But I felt like it still had like a nice It creates a nice picture on the table.
Mechanics.
So I think the biggest, you know, I think the worker placement piece in this game is probably the biggest mechanic.
Yeah, it's very different than like when I see worker placement. It was much different than what I expected.
Yeah, because, you know, in what we think of with traditional worker placement games is, you know, there's a spot with an action, which this definitely had, but where your rows and columns lined up, you got another action. So you mm-hmm. weren't playing just for, you know, the where you were putting your targies, but you were also playing for where those intersect and those actions as well. And there were definitely times where I changed my mind on where I wanted to go or went to cards that maybe I couldn't use because I needed that row or column because I wanted that center card. So I thought it was definitely a different, and I don't think we've played a game, a worker placement game like that. I can't think of one. So I thought it was definitely a different take on worker placement. And I liked that different take on it.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. And like, you know, I predicted at the beginning, oh, you're going to be getting new workers and you don't, you have your set amount. And yeah, it plays really, I don't know that we've played anything really like it. We've played all the mechanics, but the way they're put together is a lot different than anything else I feel like we've played before. Yeah. And then it's got a big abstract piece to it where you're kind of playing a grid. I thought it was really clever.
So what did you think of so you talked about iconography before, just for the folks at home who haven't played it before or seen it, on one side of the card is the icons. And on the other side, if you aren't as familiar with the game, the other side has the text for how that is actually played. And that's specifically for the border cards.
Which is also a clever thing to do.
Especially if those border cards don't change. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to do.
I don't think we need to look at the text at all. So I think it was really good iconography. It was all pretty clear.
I think we flipped over two cards total the whole game to see what was on the other side.
That's just at the beginning too.
Yep. And in the beginning, and once we read it, it was like, oh, that makes sense. And the icons make sense for it as well. So,
and then all the written sort of bonuses and stuff were also pretty clear. I don't think we had any questions on those. So, I mean, it was a well done job on the design.
And the rule book itself. Yeah. It's a very short rule book. The game itself, I mean, there's not a whole lot to it. It's one of those games where there's not a lot of rules, but, you know, there's some strategy to it. But yeah, the rule, I was a little afraid because the first version that I found was like a translated from German. And so there was like definitely some like, oh my, moments. But then I found an updated version from when they actually made a an English version. And in that rule book, it was like, hey, translated by these people, edited by these people. So they definitely put some more care into the translation. So that rule book was easier to read. I did watch a how to play video. So shout out to John Gitz Games, who did a how to play this year, actually, even though the game is 8 years old at this point. So his video was very good. And I was able to, once I read the rules and watched that video, I was like, oh, it all makes perfect sense now.
Planner action, I thought was kind of hit or miss. There were certain times of the game where I was very focused on what you were doing and trying to block you or just trying to watch your cards, figure out what I needed to do. And then there were like a couple turns where I just did what I needed to do and didn't even pay attention to you. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, classic worker placement, right? You know, depending on how many spaces you could put your worker and how many players you have, I feel like some turns you have a lot of competition and other turns everybody kind of does their own thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And then like, yeah, sometimes it felt like you had intentionally were watching what I was doing and trying to like compete for a spot or something. And other times it was like you screwed me. And you're like, huh?
Yes.
yeah. It's like,
exactly.
And so, so it kind of depended. And it might vary on play style and stuff. You could probably get pretty aggressive with trying to block people, but I don't know that you would win.
Especially with so few workers, you kind of have to do your own thing. And that blocking piece really has to be like, it's a super important reason to block. Like you're going to get your fourth of an icon or something.
Yeah. Well, I think one time I blocked you from getting a gold piece because I had no plan for that turn and you didn't even need it. I had no reason to do it. So I basically, I wouldn't say I wasted a round because I just was trying to gather stuff, but it really served no purpose.
I mean, I could have used it. I was able to have a turn without it.
Yeah, but you just did something else and then got it the next turn. So.
You moved off of it and I was like, you ass.
But yeah, it's an interesting one in terms of player interaction. And there is a little bit of like directness. I had one card that reduced the amount of workers he could play. So there is, I don't know if there's more of that, but if you know, you really hate direct conflict cards in your worker placements, then that might put you, I don't mind it personally, but I know some people with these kind of games really don't like those kind of cards in there, but.
Right.
All right. Would you play it again?
Yeah, I would definitely play it again. I totally understand why it was a 2012 Kinderspiel nominee and why it was, because I think, so Tom had it pretty high on his top 10 T games.
T, like letter games that start with T?
Yeah, games that start with letter T. But he also kind of, I don't know about gushed about it, but it was just like, you know, this game is really, really good attitude to it. So, you know, it was beyond just like, oh, I can only pick games with T. It was like, this game is good. And I totally get that. And I really enjoyed playing it. I was looking at the other two-player games that we've played. And I think of all the two-player games that we've played on this podcast, games specifically designed for two players, this might be my favorite.
Really?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Okay. I play it again. It's a little bit more abstract and... I guess Euro-y. I didn't really feel like that much of Euro. It's a little more abstract, I don't know, than I would normally play, I think. I wouldn't say I loved it, but I definitely played again. It was fun. I like, compared to a recent episode where we played Jaipur, like that like
you,
left...
You did, I didn't. I haven't even heard it at this point.
You haven't even heard yet. that one kind of left me like, I don't know why this was a two-player game. I felt like it just could have been a more... player game, it would have been more fun with more players. Like, I get why this is a two-player game. It's very sort of like, you know, I'm gonna place here, you're gonna place there, like back and forth element, which I think makes for a good two-player game. But I in terms of those, I mean, I would say Fugitive and Watergate I would place over this for our two-player games that we played on this podcast. Okay.
Yeah, I forgot about Fugitive.
Yeah, it was like Fugitive is the top.
Yeah, okay. So yeah. I'll agree with that. Fugitive and then this.
And you didn't play Watergate, but
I watched you, but I think between those two, like I would still pick Fugitive and I think I would still pick Tarji over Watergate.
And I think that kind of plays to our styles too, because Watergate's a little more like deductive back and forth. This is a little more analytical. So that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I agree.
That is Tarji.
If you have any recommendations of games you would like to hear our impressions on, maybe ones that use worker placement in totally different ways, please send them our way. You can do it via email at firstturntabletop@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter or Instagram at firstturncast. And the podcasting camel says, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcatchers. We look forward to hearing from you. Play more games.
Stick to the plan, Eric. Stick to the plan. Damn it. When that gold comes out, it's like, I just want the gold.
Okay. All right. And then you get to go first this round.
Okay, well, the plan has... I forgot the plan.
The whole last turn, you were like, stick to the plan.